good to see everybody here. It's sort of sad to see the young people go into classes, you know, because they are a great group of young people, and they contribute so much to our body. And the way they serve, the way they've been, you know, start serving at a young age, and it's only going to get better from here on out. So to all the parents of the young people, just I commend you for what you do to get them in here, that they've been taught how to serve, that you can't start too early to begin to serve. So good job, parents, and just let your young kids know that they're doing the right thing, and they can be proud. Okay, so we're gonna talk about Samuel tonight, and I think most of the men who have taught know that, you know, you can't do justice to the whole book in 30 or 40 minutes, but we're just going to push along and cover as much as we can. Of course, I always welcome comments, questions. I may not be able to answer all the questions, but comments are for sure welcome, and we'll get as far as we get, and it's better to cover things in detail and learn some things rather than just try to, you know, check the boxes and make, you know, cover the book. So so we'll start out with Samuel, and the only way I saw to do it was kind of go in chronological order of Samuel's life from when he was young to toward the end of his rule, and he really was the transition between being a judge and being under God's rule to when we reach Saul, who is the first king. And you know, the people of Israel had demanded a king. We got to have a king. And so Samuel said, okay, you're going to get a king. And you want him, you got him. So so in the beginning, we'll start in 1 Samuel in the first bit of that chapter. So and I'll read some of the verses, and so we know that in the beginning Elkanah was Samuel's father, and he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And they were a godly family. Hannah, Elkanah was a good man, good leader of his family, practiced polygamy. So there is that. But and Elkanah loved both his wives, and maybe Hannah more than Peninnah. Just because he had in that first in verse 5 of chapter 1, he says, "But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb." So this troubled Hannah quite a bit, and so she, you know, being without children, and Peninnah kind of lorded it over her and gave her grief because she had no children. So every year they went to Shiloh to worship and worship and then and give alms and so in verse 11 of chapter 1, so Hannah is she's very upset that, you know, she has no children. She can't do anything. She has no children, and that's a fundamental, you know, basis of womanhood. And so in verse 11, and she vowed a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look upon the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head." So she's in the temple, and she's praying fervently. And the high priest there was named Eli, and Eli had seen her, and she was just praying and praying and praying and praying. Her mouth was moving, but she wasn't speaking. This was a heartfelt prayer to God. And Eli thought she was drunk, that she was just mumbling and drunk in the temple. And she said, "No, I'm just praying. I'm praying for a child." And so as it turns out, Eli, when he learned that she was praying for a child, then he said, "Your prayer will be answered." And so then, you know, she heard that from the high priest, and so she that calmed her down and gave her hope. So after they got to they got home, and yes, indeed, she had conceived, and so she ends up having Samuel then. Moving on to chapter 2, now the high priest Eli had two worthless sons. You know, they were exercising their position to ill gain. They weren't godly men. They didn't follow after God, and so actually when Samuel had been weaned and was old enough to leave his mother, then sure enough, Hannah took Samuel to Eli and said, "Here's my child, raise him in the church." And, you know, hard to imagine that. You know, you have this young child, 3 years old, 4 years old, and then you just have to, you know, God answered her prayer, and she had to take she took Samuel to the high priest Eli, and he began to serve in the temple, in the church, as he was able, you know, starting from a young age. So verse 18 of chapter 2, Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child girded with a linen ephod, which is just a covering. And so his mother came to visit him once a year, made him a little coat, and every year she got to make another coat and bring it to give to Samuel. And Eli, the high priest, blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, verse 20, "The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord." And they went into their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord. So that's that's the Lord seeing her commitment and enabling her to have other children to replace, not really to replace, but to ease the pain of losing that child. In chapter 3, this is when the Lord is calling Samuel to actually be, you know, subject to the Lord, you know, because he was, you know, still very young. And so we're looking in chapter 3 around verses 8 through 21. And so Samuel is laying in bed and he hears this voice calling him. And he would get up and he would run to Eli and say, "Yes, what, you called me?" And Eli would say, "No, I didn't call you." And he did that three times. And finally, Eli understood that it was the Lord calling Samuel. And so he said, go back to bed. And whenever you're called, say, "I am here. What do you want?" You know, he was instructing Samuel just to answer the Lord and see what the Lord required of him. verse 11 of chapter 3, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I will do a thing in Israel at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end." So the Lord is observant, and he's seen what's going on. Eli's two sons, his two worthless sons, who were just like, they were stealing the meat and different things, and they were having it their way. And actually, Eli was permitting it to go on, you know, by not stepping in. And so this is where the Lord makes a promise that I'll deal with it. You know, I'll deal with it in my time.
A couple of things that I read when I go through this as well. We were talking on Sunday about giving our first fruits and the best that we have. And I think about when Samuel's mother, like, the Lord gave me this child. I mean, what better commitment, even if the child lives in my house, that I've committed my children to the Lord. Right now, Samuel's not going to live with her, obviously. He lives over to the temple of the priest. But I think about that commitment. Like, the Lord gave me this. It's not really mine. It's the Lord's. And I'm not saying that makes it any easier if you were to take a child, but, give it back to the temple and to the priest and stuff. That doesn't make that easy because it's still your child. But figuratively speaking, that is, and how we think of all the things that God's given us. You know, we think this is mine, well, I'm going to have this, I'll give God a portion of it. You know, that mentality of her to realize this is a gift that I have been missing, that I've been given, and I'm going to give it back to the Lord and let the Lord use it for his glory and not just for this thing that she's been given. And then when she did that, what happened to her?
She got blessed.
She got blessed more. I mean, that's like Sonny's beeline right there about, you'll give your blessing and you'll give more. You know, that Sonny talks about a lot around that thing. And also, in the chapter that we're in now with 3, his eagerness, I like. The fact that in verse 15, he says that Samuel lay down in the morning and opened the doors of the house of the Lord. And he couldn't even, he was so eager to be he's not a priest. But he's there to open the door. He's like, let's get this thing rolling, because the Lord spoke to him in his eagerness. And when the Lord's asking us to do things and asking us to be the type of people that we need to be and take these roles and, to be the full Christian that we can, are we doing it? We know that he's calling us, and we just turn a blind ear to it, like, that must be something. Surely it's not me, or I'm not good enough. We'll give all these excuses like Moses does. But when we hear that voice, do we act upon it? Okay, I'm going to tackle this. I don't know why I like that. The fact that he goes and opens the doors. He lay down until morning. I just get the impression that he's running there and he's excited and he's ready to answer that call.
Yeah, he was raised in the house of the Lord, and that's why I made a comment about the young people. You know, here they are in the house of the Lord. They're being raised right by their parents and doing the right thing. And that's why they're going to be, great kids, great adults, and do great things. Because they're, they're actually, and that's Samuel's situation when he's young. And this is what I do. I serve in the house of the Lord. I open the doors first thing in the morning. And God spoke to me last night. For real, he did. And so, he goes and goes ahead and, he knows the Lord is with him, speaks to him, he answers, he does. Moving on, in verse 17 and of chapter 3 and moving on, Eli questions him in the morning, "What is the thing that the Lord hath said unto thee? I pray thee, hide it not from me. God do so to thee, and more also, if thou hide anything from me of all the things that he said unto thee. And Samuel told him every whit and hid nothing from him. And he said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good." And that included Samuel telling him that the Lord was going to take care of your household in time, in his own time. And that's all part of that. And later, of course, it does pass. It does come to pass, later on after Samuel's older. Verse 19, "And Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and did let none of his words fall to the ground." And all Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was established to be a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. In chapter 4, we're... And, you know, it never really says how old Samuel is when most of this happened, but they it comes to a time when the Philistines and the Israelites are in battle again. That was just like one of those things. Yeah, they're always going to be in battle until the Lord intervenes. Verse 1, and the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And when the people were coming to the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." Israel didn't bring the question before God, like, what do we do now? How should we act going forward? Here the Israelites were attempting to use the Ark of the Covenant as a good luck charm. We got our little amulet, or we got the Ark of the Covenant, and just because we have the Ark, we'll be good. We'll be good after that, instead of, they thought it would bring God into their camp, and it would, everything was going to be fine after that. So they brought the ark, and then the Israelites, man, they celebrated and they yelled out, and the Philistines were they were camped close enough together that they could hear the excitement and the roar from the Israelites, and they were afraid. The Philistines knew something was up, and verse 8. They say, "Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness." So the reputation had gone out about the Israelites and how things passed because they were, God's people. It just goes forward, 9 and verse 10. And the Philistines fought, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent, and there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. And the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, named Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. So here's, God's plan is going forward. He claimed he was going to deal with it, and so here's the sons of Eli were killed in that battle. So then a messenger runs from the battleground, and he goes to tell Eli, who is kind of, he's old at this time. Chapter 4 and verse 18, and it came to pass when he made mention of the ark of God that he, meaning Eli, fell off of the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died, for he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So that's the kind of the end of the story for Eli and his sons. So they all, the nation of Israel, like, wow, we lost our ark. How did that happen? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, good comment. Yeah, it wasn't, the sons, like you said, he knew that was coming. And he had heard, and maybe that was, you know, a long, long time ago, that Samuel had revealed God's message about him and his sons. And so here's the, but the ark, you're right, the ark was the thing that he's like, well, it's all coming to pass. So so the Philistines now have the ark, and they bring it into their camp, and they have their god is called Dagon. And so they bring the Ark of the Covenant in, and they set it beside Dagon, and they come back the next morning, and Dagon is laying down on the ground. Okay, we better just pick him back up. And so the next day, then they come, and Dagon, his head is gone, and his hands are gone, and his legs are gone. He's just laying there. It's just a god. It's just, you know, it's a their symbol of a god, just a statue. And so Dagon is now... the Dagon is destroyed. Verse 5 of chapter 5. Therefore, neither the priests of Dagon nor any that came into Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod until this day. But the hand of the Lord was heavy upon them of Ashdod, and he destroyed them and smote them with emerods, even Ashdod and the coast thereof. So it's not spelled the same way, but it's the same affliction. So if anybody needs, I'm not going to fill in the blanks, but so the Lord afflicted them. So they decided, we got to get this thing out of here. So verse 8, they sent therefore and gathered all the lords of the Philistines unto them and said, what shall we do with the ark of the God of Israel? And they answered, let the ark of the God of Israel be carried about unto Gath. And they carried the ark of the God of Israel to there. So, verse 9, and it was so that after they had carried it about, the hand of the Lord was against the city with a very great destruction, and he smote the men of the city, both small and great, and they had emerods in their secret parts. So then, it got to go now. So they send it off to Ekron, and the same thing basically happens there. And so they were all, wherever this thing is, bad things happen. So we have to, they have to get rid of it. So they decide, yeah, we got to give it back to Israel. And we'll put some little gifts of, what they call them? It was called a trespass offering. So they had to make some little gold things. They were called... verse 4 of chapter 6, what should we make? And they said, 5 golden emerods and 5 golden mice, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines, for one plague was on you all and on your lords. And so that's what they did. They made, you know, they put together, you know, the little, and they, I think they put it in the ark. So in verse 7, of chapter 6. So they made a new cart, and they have two they call them milk kine, which is cattle. And so they're taking the ark back to Israel. So they took it, and I guess the men in verse 19 of chapter 6, and he smote the men of Beth Shemesh, because they were taking it to get it back to Israel, but they had looked into the ark, and so the Lord caused 50,000 and 70 men to be killed because they actually looked into it, and so that was. What happened, you know, is getting the ark back to getting back to Israel. Yeah.
Isn't it ironic that the Israelites thought that it was some magic to protect them, and so now the Philistines got it thinking, well, you know what? They thought it could help them. We'll take it to help us. And God has shown everybody it's his power. It's not this ark in and of itself, and so everywhere it's going, it's still not working the way nobody wanted.
Yeah, it was you know, it just wasn't home. You know, it just wasn't home. And if you thought, you know, it'll be fine. We're just going to put it here and it'll be fine. We own it and it's ours. Yeah. Any questions, comments? Son?
But our Heavenly Father, He has eyes, He can see, and He has hands, and that is the difference. And Dagon is just, it's a piece of wood that they go to the forest and carve and put it on the side and they worship, but we worship the Almighty God.
Yeah, yeah, the living God. Question?
I would just say, on the same thing, I just thought what I was saying.
He has a great sense of humor. God has a great sense of humor. Yeah. Okay, you want to pick him back up? Now he has no hands or feet, so that's or the head. Yeah. We can't make this stuff up. It really happened, you know, so. Okay, any other comments, questions? Yeah, first.
I think there is a lot of humor in this. I mean, like you can see some, like, plays on words. And one that kind of stood out to me, I always thought it was interesting that it said that Eli was heavy when he fell and broke his neck. And, I mean, that's just an interesting detail. I wonder what do we take from that? You know, was it, did he eat too much? Or maybe he was eating with fat that he shouldn't have eaten? Or, you know, maybe there
he had a dad bod or something like that. So.
When you look at that word, it's actually the same word that's translated as honor in other places. It's honor or it's heavy. And it has, I mean, those two words seem very different, but in the sense that it could go either way, depending on the context, that word could either mean that something was like enlarged in honor, or that it was enlarged in someone being fat. And so you see that word in the way that God talked about Eli before. He said, "And honorest thy sons above me." Same word. And then the next verse, "Be it far from me, for them that honor me, I will honor." So he talks about, you know, being enlarged. And then, I mean, if we give him that place of being enlarged in our lives, he will enlarge us in that way as well. And then Eli fell over and broke his neck because he was large. But then that humor, it's funny. I mean, I think it's supposed to, there's some irony in there.
There's plenty of that, yeah.
In the way that with the ark story, it came to pass when he made mention of the ark of God that he fell from off the seat backward. Oh, no, that was the heavy. So, sorry, in the next chapter. But the hand of the Lord was heavy upon them of Ashdod. So, again, that same word, this honor or, like, large, you know, being heavy, continues throughout this story of, I think it's understanding God and who he is and giving him the place of honor that he deserves.
Because yeah.
He is large. He deserves honor. And it can either break us or confer honor upon us, depending on how we treat him.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, let's see. Chris or Larissa first? Did you have it?
I just thought it was interesting that the Philistines, you know, they were struck with the, you know, tumors down under, and then they had the good sense not to open the box, because when they sent it back, they put a box next to it with the gold tumors. Gold mice that they had made, so they had the good sense not to. But then you see later on in the chapter that God strikes down the men of Beth Shemesh because they did have the nerve to open and look in the box. Now, I can understand the temptation, right, because it's been gone, and you don't know what's happened to it. So I think there's temptation to open it and just check, you know, but it's a holy thing before the Lord, so he's got them now.
Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
So it was bad and gruesome, but if you honor God and you do what you're supposed to do, you may have died miserably and broken your neck, but if you've done what you're supposed to do, it doesn't mean that you
die. Yeah, it's not eternal. Not eternal. Okay. Johnny.
I find it kind of hopeful, actually, as far as how the ark is treated, or more importantly, how God's name is treated. Because when you have the ark brought into the camp of Israel, Philistines know what it is. They know what it represents. And then they have the opportunity to make a mockery of God and say God has no power when they defeat the Israelites, drive them back, and capture the ark. It's like, well, their God is useless. He has no power. And then, even though Israel has tarnished his name through that careless act, God is still almighty, and he let the Philistines know that he was not a false god, he was not an idol, he was not somebody to be tampered with by doing this. And I think it's a great kind of story of hope in the fact that there are many Christians today that have tarnished the name of God, that have made God of ill repute through their actions, through their words, through their conduct. And I think it's kind of encouraging here that, you know, God, his word will never fail. He will always be here. Even if we make a mess of things, even if we turn people away from him, he is still out there. He can still show them to him, even if we're not involved. And it's just kind of a showing of God's power, even if we as humans mess up his name.
Yeah, God has a plan for all of us, and you can either glorify God in your actions or tarnish his name by your actions. But, you know, as we saw that, you know, God's plan may take a few years, but, you know, Eli and his sons were part of the plan. And it took a while, but, you know, God's will be done. So, any other questions, comments? Okay. Chapter 7 and verse 3, so Samuel is still the leader by God's placement. He's the leader, and so verse 3, and Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, If ye do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth, and served the Lord only. So we there were some notes about, you know, leading the nation in God's ways. And that was Samuel's, you know, that was Samuel's position. He knew what was right, and he did what was right, no matter what, you know, what other people thought. You know, he just had faith. You know, God is going to do, if we do right, then we'll be in a great nation. So so he had brought all the nations together. Samuel had brought all the tribes together, and so he the things that are kind of leading the nation in God's ways. So number one is unity. All Israel was gathered. The divisions and jealousies of preceding years were renounced. Confession. The people poured out their hearts before the Lord. The abandonment of false gods. They put away the Balaam and Ashtaroth and served the Lord only. The intercessory prayer. The one condition of revival, personally, for us, is the same. The one condition of revival is to get back to prayer. And then the people had asked Samuel, cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us. And the fifth term of for a revival was full surrender. in that chapter. So Samuel had made this burnt offering after they brought everybody together and he had made a burnt offering for their kind of the sin offering and all. And yield thyself to God, and thy Philistine sins stealing up the valleys will fall back discomfited, and thou shalt raise thine Ebenezer. So Israel proved. There was immediate evidence that God had accepted them. And so that was why I had the song led about, the song that Tim led, Here I Raise My Ebenezer. And that was just a monument that Samuel had erected, which means until now, God has been in control. God has, been in control and brought us this far. So that's why there was a monument to that, a simple monument, but it was giving God the credit. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, verse 8, it says, and the people of Israel said to Samuel, do not cease to cry out to the Lord our God for us, that he may save us from the hand of the Philistine. I find great comfort in that as believers, that we have an intercessor up above that we can pray to, that can go to God for us when we aren't doing what we need to do. And I think that should be comforting to us, and that's why it's so important for us to never cease in our prayer, be fervent in our prayers, to always know that we can go to him, and he will, if we are faithful, and just to forgive us.
Yeah, yeah, because we all have sin in our lives, and, you know, in word, thought, or deed, in some way, you know, and it's just like, then when you catch yourself and you catch yourself in it, then you just, I messed up, you know, forgive me for that, and I'll do better. And so you, you know, you have to go forward that way, you know, because you're always going to have a little misstep here or there. And that's a way to, you know, kind of let God know.
Friends may stop praying for you. Your friends, you know, people that you believe to do this or that. But the intercessor that we have above never ceases on our behalf. And that should be comforting for us.
Immensely. 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 Yeah, that was that comes a little bit later in the chapter, though, when verse 12 of chapter 7. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. So that was a monument to say, yeah, we're here because God helped us. God was on our side, and that's why we've come this far, and the Philistines have been routed. Verse 13, so the Philistines were subdued, and they came no more into the coast of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Verse, yeah, go ahead.
So you can choose
Yeah, and Eli did serve, but then, you know, doing nothing is still doing something. And he didn't set things right in his own house. You know, his sons were, you know, they exercised their position, you know, to take meat from the offering table and to do other things. And they didn't, you know, so Eli was held accountable for that, you know, and his sons were also. So that, you know, the Lord took care of things in his own time.
I think about along with Corey talking about, like, if you look back and look at Eli's house and think that Hannah's going to give her son to this thing, that's a bad move. Like, when you go back and see what's happened, like, Eli and his sons, and it's just not a good environment, right? I'm not going to put my kid there. It makes you wonder, or makes me wonder, what influence did Samuel's mom have when she came annually to visit? Right? I understand that he was set up, and this is God's
good
plan.
Good point.
I can get all that. But it makes you wonder the influence that he has, that you can be for this environment and see what the sons are doing. Well, that's acceptable. Eli lets the sons do that. Well, that must be acceptable. He's no Eli's son. And if Samuel can, you know, distance himself from God by following Eli's sons, and because he allows that to happen, so it must be approved. It just makes me wonder the influence that Samuel's mom had on those annual visits coming and reinforcing what it is. It's so that, and going back to Corey's point, you know, if, regardless of that environment that you're in, you can still be God's person. You can still be God's ownership, regardless of the environment. You people see people doing this? No, we're going to do it this way. And we're going to do it God's way, regardless of what's going on around there. I think it's when you look back, like, no, I'm not putting it in there. I'm going to go somewhere else, and, you know, he can serve God's eyes. I'm not putting it in these people because it's a clown show. But God, but Samuel.
It was kind of the way it started out, you know, because Eli was the one that granted Hannah the and said, the Lord hears you. And so that would be the impetus for her to drop him off. And I think it was a slow downhill slide for Eli and his sons. They just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And then Samuel is growing up and getting stronger and stronger in the Lord. And so then he hears God, and God speaks to him, and he knows right. And he knows the path that he should do. And so it was kind of like, you know, their paths diverged, and that's where Samuel ended up to be a great judge. And then he appointed Saul, and then, no, I'm not going to spoil it for you, you know. So, but I would gladly teach more on this book. It's been a great challenge, great learning process and all, and I encourage any of the men who are thinking about it, just, you know, we're all your brothers and sisters, and we want you to do well. So just do all you can do with what you got. So anyway, I'll continue anytime you want. So
thank you, sir.
Okay.